Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we hear about the premiere of a new children's musical. John Erickson's Hank the Cowdog series of books are incredibly popular with young children, both as books and as audiobooks, and there are over 50 titles in the series. But they've never been adapted into another media until now, as Tulsa Repertory Musicals will present the new musical tonight through Sunday, Hank the Cowdog and Monkey Business. Several years ago, Tulsa Repertory Musicals' Dan Call inquired whether Erickson would allow a musical adaptation. When the answer he got back was yes, he turned to playwright David Blakely. Blakely has created a play within a play, with the story existing as a radio drama. David Blakely joins us today. He's a playwright, actor, and director and designer. He's currently director of the Rogers State University Theater Program. In addition to Hank the Cowdog and Monkey Business, he'll also be premiering a short 10-minute musical, The Next Blue Moon, in August as a part of the Heller Shorts Festival. He joins us along with director and Tulsa Repertory Musical founder Dan Call. Hank the Cowdog and Monkey Business has performances tonight through Saturday at 7:30. With matinees Saturday and Sunday at 3 at the PAC. David and Dan, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's good to be here.
Yeah.
Dan Call, let me start with you. Tulsa Repertory Musicals, I guess you sought out John Erickson. For those who don't know, John Erickson has done, about a half a gazillion Hank and the Cowdog.
Yeah, he's
titles.
Done 59 and counting. He really has.
Very popular children's books, like an early reader sort of
right,
book.
Right. And you know what's interesting about it is he has voiced all those books. They're on audio recordings, and they're word for word. So really young readers can read each word, and
so
they can follow
they can read
along.
Yeah.
So how did you get the idea?
Well, I had a patron, a friend. She said, Dan, I know you've done a year with Frog and Toad, the children's musical for years. We've been in dozens of schools. She said, what do you think about the idea of writing a musical about Hank the Cowdog? I said, who? And she said, Hank the Cowdog, written by John Erickson. I said, I don't know. I'll ask. So a year ago, I met with John. Kathy and I had a meeting with him. And I said, Mr. Erickson, we'd like to write a musical about your Hank the Cowdog books. She said, okay. And we decided, let's go for it. Part of our mission is to take these children's musicals into the schools, promote and encourage reading. So it was a natural flow there to write another musical.
And that's where David comes in. I guess you asked David.
Sure. We need somebody.
So how were you approached, David?
Well, I've known Dan for a very long time. Dan was actually my high school choir teacher.
Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago.
And I knew that the project was in the works, but we didn't know where it was. And I am a playwright, and said if you would be interested in having someone adapt the book for the stage, that would be great. And so when we were having our first meeting about it, I was there as, I thought, the playwright. And I ended up asking the question, and so it's a musical, so who is going to be writing the music? And they all looked to me. Okay,
yeah,
I'll try. I have written music for children's plays, actually for a number of different kinds of plays.
We had a small audience last night, and they loved it. The music was stirring.
Well, now, John Erickson, he's done all these titles, and a children's book author is a little bit different than, a adult novelist. They're far more approachable, I have found.
Right.
But I'm surprised that, somebody hasn't thought of this before, and I guess he had talked to Disney at one point.
I don't think, that he did talk to Disney back in the 80s. I don't know who approached whom, but Disney said, well, we'll put your books on screen and we'll work on it, but we need to do this first. He said, what? We need to write a contract that says we want all rights to your books in the United States, internationally, and in the contract it says in the universe. He said, well, I'd like to still write books again, and this was about probably 13 or 14 when he had visited with them. So he said, no, thank you. And he's up, like I say, up to 59.
I think he was really looking for those Alpha Centauri rights.
And we found out, too, that as we started writing about these books, that they're universally known and loved, especially young guys that don't like to read. They get into these books, the adventures, the great friendship of Drover and Hank, and they can't have enough of it. I mean, and there's some things in there that are just really kind of scary. That's why the guys like them.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you got into the books, I guess you had to read a number of these Hank.
Oh, yeah.
You killed all books. And so what was your reaction to them?
Well, they're very funny books. They are books that use wordplay and sort of relationship, humor to tell the story. And they're really delightful books. They're absolutely delightful books. They're hard to adapt to the stage because, I mean, if you have a dog, dogs will like, I'm going to go out to the pasture for a while. And now I'm going to go over and take a nap. And it, he has really captured that.
Sure.
Not necessarily a dramatic arc that you would see on stage, but has captured those relationships and how and animal behavior as well as human behavior.
But what
who else?
What we found out, too, is that we could not do a compilation of all those books. So we had to zero in on one book, and it was number 14. It just happened to be. But it's Hank the Gag Dog and Monkey Business. And somebody said, what is that? What are you up to? And I said, well, it sparks the imagination just from the beginning of that. And monkeys are funny. They do goofy things. And so we thought, what better road to take?
Now, when you have source material that uses animals and humans, the first decision is, am I going to use animals or am I going to use humans as animals?
Radio station comes to mind.
Well, that's one of the things that we did is we decided that we didn't necessarily want to have a big guy with furry feet and floppy ears as our main character.
As the monkey.
Right. Right. Or so what we decided to do was set it in a radio studio, very much like this one, where actors are at their microphones, Central and they're telling the story.
So you really,
that way.
So you've set it up as a sort of a radio show, in a way.
Prairie and Home Companion comes to mind.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you have lots of sound effects.
Oh, lots of sound effects, and we try to also make sure that those sound effects are visual effects. So if they're scattering chickens, all we really have to hear is the chickens scattering. But what we see is feathers flying everywhere.
By the way, I don't know if you knew it or not, but Hank believes that chickens were born to be scattered, and that's what he and Rover live to do.
Yes, right. It's something that's required by your better breed of dogs.
That's right.
That's what he says.
So it's different from doing a radio show because you're doing a radio show for an audience.
With
so
audience.
It has
right.
to look.
Right.
It doesn't really have to have the sound. It has to have a visual element to it.
And so we went back to the days of yesteryear in radio rather than the sort of contemporary, where Edgar Bergen is a radio star and he's a ventriloquist
who moves his lips.
Well, So there's obvious audiences in the studio themselves, and so what the actors are doing is are playing for the studio audience as well as for the on-air audience, and so that gives us activity, action, and we actually incorporated a very small story that has to do with the radio station. They're waiting for an actor who's vitally needed for the...
It's not waiting for Geffman, but it's kind of like
right.
It.
But who's needed for the particular episode of Hank the Cowdog.
So how many iterations did you go through before you kind of came up on this sort of radio show sort of... or did that
come up pretty early?
Well,
what came to mind was we knew that the kids had read the books and they'd heard the audio, and we didn't want to take away from their imagination. So we wanted to put it in a studio where they could hear the words and see it portrayed by humans and see what their reaction. And it is a work in progress. We are still workshopping it as we go. You know, writing, like David has done, writing a musical from ground zero up is both exhilarating and terrifying at the same time because you don't have a template. You don't have some, let's go back and see what another theater company thought about this section. We're it. We're kind of like Smash without Marilyn Monroe, you know what I'm saying? But we won't know the full impact until we get that audience.
So we're on draft 6 right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so do you think this is going to be the final form as this radio show, or do you think this is more like a more sort of somewhere between workshop and what the final version may be?
I think one of the things that we need to have is an audience.
To see this.
A target
there
audience.
There you go.
Yeah. Right. And then what I usually do is I watch the audience instead of the play because we have built into the script opportunities for young people to wiggle around. When they scatter chickens, the audience participates in that, and that allows the young people to get rid of a lot of that energy that they have stored up. But if it doesn't work, both children and grown-ups are very unforgiving when they're bored watching stuff, and the kids will start to wiggle, and the adults will start to read the program.
Yeah, with these shows, it really is not rocket surgery, but it's a form of entertainment and escape from daily troubles and trials and tribulations. And so, but since I'm a retired educator, we do love to throw the education part in there whenever we can. And taking these into schools is a wonderful thing, because I love to go in before we take a show, like Hank the Cow Dog, and set the kids up for success. I tell them a few things, what it means to be a great audience, how they can do that, and how it's okay to laugh, it's okay to applaud. Use your attention. If you've missed it, it's not a video. If you've missed it, you've missed it forever. Use your imagination. Look at Drover and Hank running on the ranch. Look at the ranch. Look at the ranch house. See Sally Mae cooking breakfast, all these things. And the most important thing is use your energy. Yeah.
Yeah, you're using imagination because there are no ranch houses. And
right. Exactly. It's okay to do all this. Right.
And one of the things that I try to do when I write plays, I don't think that theater is complete without an audience, just like you can't sing a song without having someone there to hear it. It's not finished.
It's not complete.
Right. And so I'm constantly saying, what is it that the audience is, how does the audience interact with the event or participate in the event? And so to get back to your question, is it a workshop? Is it done? We'll know when we see how the audience is reacting. And if they are reacting positively or if there are parts where we need to work on it, then that's what we'll do.
Did you consider doing sort of a realistic telling with sets or the like? But because most children's musicals are usually done in black box sort of situations. I think
once again, we wanted to encourage your imagination to see. Yeah. The crux of the story is that these trucks are driving on the ranch, and they do not have permission. Well, anyway, a mysterious red box falls off of the truck, and it hits Hank in the back. Well, on the box, it says, "Warning monkey, do not open." Well, being curious and being Hank is head of ranch security, he has to investigate to see, is there a monkey in the box or not? The question is, do we open the box or not?
We don't.
Yeah, we shouldn't. We know that monkey mayhem will happen if it is open. So, imagination.
Right. And if you're talking about a realistic depiction of that, the sprawl of the ranch, the sprawl of the locations, the...
You're just not going to be able to do it in a black box sort of situation.
And it's so much easier to just ask the audience to go there in their mind. They can get there much quicker, and they can fill in the scenery. They can fill in all of that stuff so much better.
And the kids, I mean, certainly parents can, because they can remember maybe hearing something on the radio at some point. But a lot of kids, you know, they never listen to the radio. This is like a brand new experience.
It is. And we're having a lot of fun with that. We have four actors in the show. One of them is a sound effects man who is not allowed to speak on the radio because the last time he did, there was an enormous fine. The stage manager of the radio station does not want to participate. So that leaves two actors left to do all the other characters.
Right.
And so the guy playing Hank says flat out, "I don't do voices."
Sure.
So the other actor plays every other role.
Right. We call him a man of a thousand voices.
So you've created a play around this play.
Yes, exactly.
Very much.
Sure, and sure. And it will keep them involved. And just being able to see an actor transform from one character to another instantaneously.
And I assume you're using some sort of props to help do that.
It's not
like I'm reading a script. I'm putting on different hats. I'm putting, you know, all sorts
right.
of
things. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I like what David did with Drover, because he's got several, like we said, several parts to play. But Drover, he's talking so fast one time, he's talking to himself. And that's hysterical. Yes.
My guests today are David Blakely, who has adapted Hank and the Cow Dog and Monkey Business from the children's series by John Erickson, wrote both book and musical. He teaches at Rogers State, and Dan Call is directing for Tulsa Repertory Musicals. They present Hank and the Cow Dog and Monkey Business, a children's musical at the Performing Arts Center as part of Summer Stage Festival, and they join us today on Studio Tulsa. We'll talk about writing music for a moment, David. You said, I've written songs, but doing a musical is a very different animal.
It is. I've been a musician since I was 7 and have played out professionally since I was about 17 and have written songs and have written musicals. A friend of mine and I have written an adaptation of Wind in the Willows, which is another bunch of animals on stage. But writing songs for musicals are very different things than writing songs to go play in cabarets and stuff like that.
There's got to be a reason for that song.
Reason, either an emotional reason, a reason to move the plot forward,
sure.
Any of those kinds of things. And that's what we try to do. In addition to that, when we set it in a time period of old-time radio, I decided then we need to have songs that sound kind of like the era. So
you're looking at 30s Western sort of sound?
Yeah, Western swing, go back a little bit to ragtime, that kind of stuff. And so using those kinds of forms, we created five new songs for them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they are catchy, and they're hummable, and the audience will want to sing along. There is one song I have to tell you, though, that David wrote that I can safely say you've never seen this kind of song on the stage or will you ever see it again. And all I can say about it, well, you need to come see the show to see that song, and you can mark my words.
It was incredibly fun. I was showing Dan the other day the title song, the catchy song that says "Who I Am" song is "I'm Hank and this is what I do" and stuff like that. And it comes right out of the book.
One of the things I was going to ask is, does his writing style lend itself towards music as far as adapting?
He has two songs in the book. Well, we don't use those songs in part because we've cut out. It's a 160-page book, and we're only going to do an hour musical, so we're not using everything.
Right.
And we're trying to sort of just tell the story, and some of his songs have a tendency to sort of
meander?
Not meander, but sort of give us insight into what the characters are like that enriches the character but doesn't necessarily move the plot forward. And so there's a song in Monkey Business about Hank's girlfriend, or the dog that he's in love with. She's in love with someone else, some other dog, and she's not in the play. She's not in the book.
Hank wants to know why.
That he's in love with her. It doesn't necessarily mean that we need to know all about his love life.
And of course, with 59 books in the series, too, it's like, you know, you're going to have references.
There's a visceral thing that happens with a live performance, both for the performer and for the audience. And we have live musicians on stage. David himself, he plays the accordion. Mm-hmm. And a wonderful accordionist.
That does mean that I need to apologize when I said I've been a professional musician.
My wife is on keyboard. George Tamayan is on percussion, and Xander Buck is on the bass. And so live music is in the theater. It's something that you can take with you the rest of your life.
And since it's a radio thing, they're part of the show, too.
They are. Yeah. And one of the things about doing a new musical, we talked about the script and how many drafts we've had of the script. The music is the same way, you know. We need to figure out how to get into it, how to get out. Some of the charts are being written. You know, could we change that? We're going to double the measures here. We're going to extend this out a little bit because we need to cover this. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, and the musicians are doing a great job of, being handed a chart that has empty measures on it and being asked to sort of fill a couple of things in.
Right. Dan, I want to ask you, as far as directing, I know you've directed musicals for years, but they're usually well-established musicals. What's it like to sort of put a thing on for the very first time?
Oh, my, it's terrifying. But we usually recreate. We find a Broadway show, like Forever Plaid or Pete and Keeley, something that is established, and go for it there. But to direct a new musical, you know, I spend hours, or Kathy and I spend hours. What we actually do is we have nut cups that we put all the positions around the theater and say, this is where this person goes, this is where it's kind of like
That's a very interesting
cop.
Way to do your staging.
It's interesting. But it is exhilarating to work with somebody like David, who's so talented and gave us good material to work with. And we try many different things out. And being in a radio studio, it is the sky's the limit. You can do anything because you've got this mic, you've got the script right in front of them. We don't quite do it like the old days where after they read their part, they just threw the page that they read off of their hand. But
onto the floor.
Yeah, right. On the floor, yeah.
Because it was done.
It was done.
But we look and see how this could look to the audience. And David, the way he's written, he has humanity in his writing, and that touches the heart. And if it touches the heart, it's going to move the people, and they will remember this. The kids want to be stirred, and they want to be excited about it. And because, like you said, the source material, they want to see these creatures come alive on stage. And we tried to think of all ways to do that. Maybe sing some of the song, maybe talk some of the song, you know, whatever works for that character. Like George Nelson playing Hank, he's got a super attitude and endearing demeanor. So that comes through. You want to encourage that type of thing. Steve Barker, he is a theater major. And from he has radio broadcasting background. So, boy, we said whenever we can, he needs to be the announcer on that microphone.
Right.
So we utilize the talents that they have. We seek them out and say, what are you good at? And then get in there and do it.
Yeah. As far as the look of the piece, do you want it to have that sort of period look, 1930s sort of,
yeah,
you know, where people actually came to a radio studio and expected to be entertained for an evening?
Yeah, that's the idea behind it, is that we try to create a star. The person who's playing Hank comes in. He doesn't do anything but Hank. And so people are coming to see Hank, very much like the people who are going to be reading all 59 of the Erickson books. I mean, so we're trying to recreate that in that old-fashioned star way. And then, you're right, creating an environment that reminds them of days of yesteryear.
Yeah. What we found out, too, is that just talking to people about Hank the Cow Dog and what their thoughts are and why they like Hank. Some families will not go on a vacation in the car without a Hank the Cow Dog audio recording. They cannot survive. They have to have it playing all the time.
I will admit that I have children, and my two boys will. They've gone through the phase. Now they're in other reading other things, but Hank the Cow Dog was a required.
This is one of those little cultural references that, unless you have children of a certain age, now my kids were Harry Potter's. So that's that was that. But you know, for
exactly.
Today, this is sort of like a cultural marker that sort of leaves other people out,
and
parents of a certain age know
well,
exactly,
you know,
what we're talking about.
We were reading through the books. There are some things in the books I think the parents don't know about, because it's not PG-13, but it's like PG-11 and a half at times, you know?
And he's been doing it for a very long time.
Yeah.
And so it's slowly sort of built up in terms of getting an audience and then keeping an audience, so that we have someone, when I mention that we're doing Hank the Cow Dog, they're like, oh, I got to come and see it, because yeah. I was in the car with the kids when we were listening
to
it.
Well, people, their faces light up when you talk about Hank. Oh, I love Hank. And we got a phone call the other day, and lady on our message, it says, come see Hank the Cow Dog at Summer Stage Festival. And she left a message, and the very last of the comments she had, we didn't know the lady. She goes, I love Hank. And I said, well, good for you. You know, we'd like to hear that.
In one way, that's great for the box office, but the other time, it's you have to do justice to this piece.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And one of
these are very beloved characters.
Right, right.
So yeah, one of the things that you have to do is be true to the source material, and we're doing our best to do that. We have to cut out some of the book, but we're trying to stay true to the story and to the relationship.
Now, have you shown a draft to John Erickson at this point?
Yes, we have.
He has read it,
uh-huh.
And he gave his blessing. He said, go for it. I like it.
All right. Well, people can see it this weekend at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center, Thursday through Saturday, matinee Saturday and Sunday, Hank the Cow Dog and Monkey Business. David Blakely, Dan Call, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Director Dan Call and playwright David Blakely speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa as Tulsa Repertory Musicals presents Hank the Cow Dog and Monkey Business, adapted from the children's series by John Erickson. Performance is scheduled for Thursday through Saturday at 7:30, Saturday and Sunday at 3 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center as a part of the PAC Trust Summer Stage Festival. For information, call 918-596-7111. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Barry Friedman.
On my way to Las Vegas recently, I was stopped at security at Tulsa International Airport for carrying an unknown object in my pants. Let me explain. After walking through the whole body scanner, the one in which you pose with your hands over your head like you're in a bad kabuki skit, I waited behind the turnstile for the final okay from the TSA official so I could get my carry-on bag. And that's when the official, in a very professional, very polite, very self-effacing way, said, "I think we have a problem." "What is it?" I asked. "Well, I can't really explain it to you, but if you wouldn't mind going through security again, going through the scanner one more time, it would save us a lot of time and trouble." "Why?" "Sir, if you look back at the screen, you'll see what I'm talking about." I did. There, where, as the kids like to say, my package was supposed to be, there was an actual package. It looked like a box, something ominous, almost cancerous. There appeared to be a triggering device to one side, and, not to put too fine a point on this, it was right between my legs. And I was naked. Well, to be fair, skeletal. And I still looked heavy. I wanted to laugh. I didn't. He wasn't laughing. "What's that?" I asked, pointing. "I don't know," he said. "Probably nothing. Probably just a matter of hiking up your pants a little. Sometimes that happens. Strange images appear. So I'm going to have to ask you to go through..." "Something that happens? Sometimes that happens," I thought. "We spend $69.1 billion in this country last year alone on Homeland Security, and we still have trouble distinguishing genitalia from a bomb?" "I understand." I did as I was told and pulled up my pants and kept pulling them up until they were just below my pectoral muscles. I looked like one of my Jewish uncles in South Florida. I felt a hernia coming on. I walked through the scanner again. When I emerged this time, there was no package, no SWAT teams waiting to take me down. "Thanks," I said. "No, thank you, sir. Thanks for your cooperation." "We can agree, I think, that an elderly woman from Omaha in a wheelchair shouldn't be required to strip for TSA officials, and a man from Kandahar with an expired visa and a handmade clock should be taken to another room. We are a country of anecdotes, though, and criticizing TSA is as easy as, well, there's nothing easier. Actually, that's not true. Junior senators from Kentucky saying the United States is turning into a police state because someone from TSA asked him to empty his pockets, that's easier. You don't like TSA? Fine. Name it something else. But I'm assuming you still want someone at the airport who has the authority to pull the clockmaker out of line. It's like the IRS. Okay, get rid of it. They're thugs. But someone has to collect the money for the government. Does it really matter what we call them, what outfit they wear? While I stood outside the scanner that second time, I started thinking about that security officer at Logan International on 9/11. They weren't called TSA back then, who allowed Mohammed Atta to board the plane that morning, even though the officer said later that Atta's face was blank and looked like the skull on a poison bottle. And then there were the security officers at Dulles who let two of the hijackers board American Flight 77, the plane that crashed into the Pentagon, even after their carry-on bags with the box cutters set off the metal detector. Safety is part science, part art, and lends itself to more Monday morning quarterbacking than the Super Bowl. So, the man with a package in his pants is hysterical. Right up until the time, it's not.
Barry Friedman is a writer, essayist, and stand-up comedian, and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own, do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.